Welcome to Backyard Oasis, a podcast designed by and for older adults living in the beautiful Pioneer Valley of Western Massachusetts and produced in the tech studios at Greenfield Community College in Greenfield, Massachusetts. Backyard Oasis reaches out to older adults who seek knowledge to help them live more thoughtfully, healthily, and happily, who hope to inspire others with their ideas, and who serve their communities in the interest of the greater good. We hope you join us frequently in our pleasant backyard oasis for wide-ranging conversations with a diversity of people who are growing older and want to talk about it.
Hi, I'm Denise Schwartz, your host. Today we're going to talk about death. Oh, please stay. Please don't go. I know it's often difficult to think about and to talk about dying, but today we're going to talk about death and dying with a death doula. This is a person who assists a dying person and their loved ones before, during, and after death. A death doula offers emotional support, conversation about dying, management of details, and can help prepare people for what's to come in so many ways. Our guest is Dina Stander. She's an experienced death doula, she's a funeral celebrant, and a burial shroud maker. And she is the founder of the Northeast Death Care Collaborative. Hello, Dina.
Good morning.
How are you today?
It is spring, and driving here was so delightful.
Yeah, there are about a million daffodils in everybody's front yards today. It's really nice.
I was talking to somebody yesterday. This is the year of magnificent daffodils.
Yes, thanks to all that rain we've had. Not everybody loves all that rain, but the daffodils certainly do. So today we're going to talk about what death doulas are and what they do. And, you know, you've talked to me once, and you said something that the baby boom bubble is now a surge of older people facing end of life. So let's talk about that, and then let's talk about how you, as a doula, can help people of any age face the end of their lives. And this is not really a sad conversation, is it, Dina?
No, it's a conversation we all need to have and become more comfortable with.
Well, let's talk about those baby boomers. I think we're both in that category.
No. I'm just
okay.
I'm at the tail end cuspy bottom of the baby boom.
Oh, as am I.
So what's happening is there is this, you know, in the way that when the baby boom came through childbirth, we started seeing birthing centers. We started seeing home births. We started seeing men included in childbirth education. We started seeing husbands and partners in the birthing rooms, which, you know, when my dad had us, he
that
was out
happen.
In the hall, right?
Right, right.
And, but so, you know, this wave of aging people mm-hmm. are creating a transformation, I think, also in how we die.
Is that because we sometimes get to a certain place in time or there's a certain incident that makes us think, the horizon of our lives is more seeable right now. Maybe I should start thinking about it.
It's that, but it's also experiences we have, for instance, when our parents, when our own elders die, and we say, okay, there's got to be a different way to approach this. You know, if you had an elder parent who had a very medicalized death or who didn't have home care available and was institutionalized at the very end of their life because there wasn't enough support or a circle of care to support them at home. And baby boomers are wanting to do this differently. Many of them are aging in place
in
their communities and not, you know, becoming snowbirds
or
whatever. And so we're needing as communities to create safer places for elders to live, mm-hmm. you know, and there's all sorts of grassroots, really, response to this with the villages of care that are organizing,
mm-hmm.
right? So it's the same thing that as the boomers come through aging, they're bringing in more resources.
So you're an end-of-life doula or a death doula. I know what that is because I've been reading about it, because I've experienced some deaths in my family and in my circle of friends. So it's something I'm interested in. But for our listeners who may not know exactly what a death doula does, could you tell us?
A death doula essentially is a person who engages with a dying person and their loved ones, really from diagnosis to last breath, right? So I might have a client who is recently received a terminal diagnosis, but mm-hmm. but with a prognosis of living 18 months or so. So, you know, from there to there, it's a long period, and their needs change over the course of time. But what a death doula does is facilitates conversations, facilitates and supports planning, facilitates engaging in life.
How do you mean? What do you mean? Here we're talking about a place that really is not leading us towards
more. No,
it's
this idea, and it's I first heard this phrase from Barbara Carnes, who's a really well-known elder in the hospice nurse community.
Okay.
And what she says is, until last breath, our job is to support living.
Wow.
Right.
Do you have examples of how you've done that?
You might put someone in the car and take them for a long ride in the autumn to see leaves in Vermont.
So,
it's making time. So what doulas do,
okay.
We provide non-medical care,
mm-hmm.
hands-on non-medical care. I can't administer medications.
Oh, of course not.
Right?
Right.
A family member or a nurse would have to be involved to do that if the person couldn't do it for themselves. But I can make soup. I can do a foot massage. I can take a loved one out to run errands so that they get a break. I can...
There's so many things.
I can do research for a family.
What kind of research? What do you mean?
If a family is thinking about... They need to know more about a certain kind of treatment that's been recommended to them, but they feel too overwhelmed to go online and pull relevant journal articles. I can provide them that. They don't have to do the time of finding more information.
Because honestly, they're probably not emotionally prepared to do that.
Sometimes they are. I mean, some people really have these skills, or they have a best friend who does it or something. But if someone doesn't have that, it's another aspect of what a doula can do. And just for instance, if a person knows they're going to be dying, but they don't feel like they have their ducks lined up,
mm-hmm.
I can companion them as they make decisions and do paperwork and write the list of songs they want played at their funeral.
Sure.
Right?
Sure.
And I'm a neutral party.
That's what I think is really important, because it might be difficult to ask a family member to help you do that, or maybe not. For some people, that might be exactly who they need to have do it.
I helped an elder make a list of assisted living facilities, you know, in a 25-mile area that they wanted to visit when their son came from out of state.
Wow. See, that's right? Really helpful.
And I could say, these are places you might want to see. And they did that, and it ended up being tremendously helpful down the road.
Now, how would a family know that you might be the person who could help them in this situation?
Someone's told them, you know, there's a doula who might be able to be helpful to you, or sometimes a medical person might make a referral and say, you know, I've heard about this person. You could see if they can work. You know, not every family... The chemistry has to be right, you know? So I'm prepared as a doula, if I meet with a family and I think they really need this other person
mm-hmm.
who has this other skill set and culturally might be more aligned with the family, I'll make that referral.
I'm curious about what most families say. That in my family, there's someone who has received a diagnosis and that person may not be with us for a long time. What would I talk to you about? And I'm curious to know what families you've worked with want to talk about. What do they want to say?
Oh, I don't think they know when we first sit down together. I had a family, a couple, who right at the beginning of COVID in lockdown, and one of the partners had vigorously metastasizing cancer that had spread to her brain. And we were on Zoom, and they were on a phone, sort of. Like, so they're leaning in together on the phone, talking to me on the other side of the screen. And I'm like, how do I read this? How do I read what they need? And the person who was ill was really committed to more trials and more treatment. And I finally had a separate meeting with the partner and said, are you committed to more trials and treatment? And how is this for you? So sometimes my job is to give the other person a place to say what they need to say.
You know, I'm thinking about that. That's really important. Thinking about someone who just passed away in my family. We had each other to talk about, but we didn't have that neutral third party that you, I think, have just mentioned. That might have been really helpful because there are some things that you hold back because you don't know what the other person might be able to hear, what they could handle at that time.
And what to ask.
Right.
And what not to ask.
Exactly.
So I worked with a family who, sooner than they had anticipated, were facing a death, and the dying person very much wanted to die at home. Their spouse was supportive of that, but there were older children from a previous marriage who they needed to call in and say, we want to talk to you. This is what we're choosing. I know it might seem unusual to you that we're choosing to do this at home and not in the hospital. And Dina's here to give you space to ask any questions. And there were questions, and including what happens if I need to leave the room?
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, I'll come out and see if I can make you a cup of tea.
Oh.
And that's allowed. And you will still receive care and support. It doesn't, you know, leaving the room doesn't mean you don't receive care and support. And this person had a lovely death with their children there too. And
isn't that what we?
And it became bearable because they had been able to ask lots of questions. And some of the questions were kind of nitty-gritty. Some of them were, you know, broader.
You know, you're making me think about, you know, yes, having the family around. We read that when we read obituaries now. That seems to be something that people really care to have. Well, two things about that. What happens, I might not even get to the second thing. What happens if you don't have a family? I mean, most people say they're afraid of dying alone. What if you don't have a family to be there? Did that ever happen to you?
I've seen this. If you don't have a family and you're in the hospital, ask for the hospital social worker and chaplain. And hospital chaplains are non-denominational, and if they're doing their job right, they won't guide you if you don't want to be God, and they will bring you in if you do. So you get what you need, but they will stay with you, or they'll find somebody else to stay with you if you're afraid to be by yourself. But you might have to ask because the nurse might not think of it.
Yeah, maybe we should talk to medical professionals about that, because if you're the person who is facing the end, are you going to think about that? Are you going to be able to say,
if you can,
please get me the chaplain?
If you can, so, often a nurse on a unit will page a chaplain.
I think they
just,
might.
A hospital chaplaincy is part of my training.
Yes.
So, this is what happens. There are also, though, people, my grandmother, for instance, who was in the hospital for a number of weeks at the end of her life, and she had 11 children and
oh boy.
Many, many more grandchildren. And so there was always people in the room, and there was one time my cousin had come from Switzerland with her twin babies, and the babies couldn't come up, and so everyone left the room to go play with the babies in the lobby, and that is when my grandmother died.
You hear about that a lot.
People some people need privacy to die, and some people need a hand to hold. The other thing I want to say is, for instance, in nursing homes, there are people who volunteer to vigil with dying patients in nursing homes. And so either through a hospice organization or a faith community, someone will go and sit all night.
Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you once, I asked you what you've learned from your experience as a doula, and you answered, you said that we work at living until our last breath. That really made me stop and think. Can you talk about that?
I have a client who I've been seeing for over a year now, whose professional life was interrupted by a terminal cancer, and in their professional life, they did a lot of international travel. And it became clear to me that while they had stopped working, they were not going to stop traveling. And they're vigorously treating their rare cancer, and they've lived a little longer than was expected already. And they continue. Like, sometimes I'm, like, shocked. Mostly I'm awed.
By the kinds of things that people can do. By the kinds of things.
And we have these really frank conversations. I'm like, okay, you're off to Shanghai. Can we talk about what happens if you have a disease flare while you're there? Who can come and advocate for you? And how's that going to work? So we sort of, we make some plans, right? And
you know, I'm thinking that by making those plans with someone, that person will feel even more comfortable about doing that trip, which that person
because
might know
thought,
would be her own.
Because we've thought through without pretending that she's A-OK.
Oh, it's going to be okay, right?
No, we think through, let's talk about what the contingencies are. I also had a really interesting conversation with them and their child.
Okay,
In their 20s, mm-hmm. About anything their child wanted to ask about the parents' choices and also about burial.
Oh,
what kind of, you know,
very important.
And one of the things this client has done is contracted with a funeral director who will actually abide by their wishes, which are pretty specific. And they have that set up.
It's really important.
Right? But I encouraged them. I said, you know, let's do the background work so that you can continue to live the way you want to live.
You know, talking about planning for your own death, or maybe for that of someone in a family, sitting down and talking to that person and saying something like, well, what music do you want to play? Do you want to have played? What do you want people to say? How do you? That really makes a lot of sense, and I'm speaking from personal experience. In fact, I've tried to do some of that already. I've put together an obituary form with all of those details, and I've given it to my husband and said, you fill this out too, please, because if something happens to me, are you going to have the presence of mind to figure out, when did I graduate from this high school, and where did I go to college, and what did I do?
And
here it is for you.
Please don't leave out that Eleanor was my best friend.
Exactly.
Until she died in our 20s.
Right.
Like, I want her named.
See, this is really important stuff. I'm just going to tell you one thing, and then I have two more things to ask you because I know we're starting to wind down now. And I think I'm talking way too loud. So there we were in the hospital room, and my dad and I were there, and my mom was in the bed. And it was a Sunday, and my dad was probably, he was watching a sports event, and I'm thinking it was probably football. And I was just sitting there going, oh, man, this is just awful. What are we doing? Suddenly, my mom says, Phil, would you turn off that television? I want to talk. Okay, this is scary. And my dad, he does, and we both look at her. And she says, I want to talk about, and I'm thinking, you know, this big spiritual thing, this way she's feeling. And she said, I want to talk about what I'm going to wear in the casket. And I just burst into tears. And she said, don't cry. She said, Denise, you bought me a dress one time, and it had this big white collar, and it reminded me of a dress I had when I was younger, and I'd like to wear that. And, you know, I just crawled on the bed, and I just hugged her. I mean, who would think that that was what my mother would want to wear in the casket? But we knew.
And the intimacy of her being able to interrupt the game,
yes,
and say this thing. And I imagine her going, if I don't tell them, they're going to bury me in
one of those white gowny things, right?
And I want this dress.
She got the dress. Okay, we're almost finished now, even though we could talk on and on because this is so important. What do you think our listeners can do right now to start to prepare for what's to come? I think we already talked about that a little bit. Start to make some plans, da-da-da. And what should they take away from this conversation? What would you hope they would take away?
In terms of planning, there are, and no matter what your age, because you can revisit them and amend them, there are tools for letting your loved ones know what you'd want if you were in an extreme hospitalization situation, mm-hmm, or had an accident and someone was needing to make decisions for you. So healthcare proxy, power of attorney, and those sorts of forms you fill out before you have an operation, right?
Oh, yeah.
Those are important to have someplace and updated. If you're older, you want to have a MOLST form. It's a form you fill out with your doctor that stays in the system so that if you have an emergency and another physician opens up about you, mm-hmm, they'll see, oh, this is that person's wishes. You should find out whether or not you'd want to sign a do not resuscitate order, and there's things to read about that. Leave notes of where to find things if you have a safe
yes,
deposit box or something like that, or life insurance somewhere, or you know, whatever it is, leave whoever you're leaving behind the clues they need to put the puzzle of you together.
Perfect.
So I think that's really one important thing to do. There are all sorts of tools online like Lifebox where you put all your important stuff. So that kind of thing. The thing I think we can do, beyond the sort of practical paperwork stuff,
yes,
is think about ourselves as being part of a community care circle, where if a neighbor, we know a neighbor's ill, we might bring a casserole, or we might offer rides to medical appointments.
So these are things we can do for others.
Things we can do for others and things we might need others to do for us. And whether in your neighborhood or with colleagues at work or with families that, your kids all play together, wherever it is, look for where are my community care circles? How do they overlap? And how do I encourage this sort of seeing the need for care in my community and engage in that.
That's really wonderful. Well, I think we've come to the end of our time. Don't you think that's appropriate for this conversation? And I'm just saying this. I've loved talking with you. I know it's a tough subject, but here we are. We've done it. I do believe you said you would come back and do another episode with us and talk about green and other kinds of burials, about funeral planning, and about burial shrouds. Now, I've got to tell you just that word shroud, Dina. That sounds so dark and final, but I do want to find out more about those shrouds.
They're not dark.
Okay, fine. So you promise you'll come back and talk again?
I promise I will.
Thank you so much.
It's been delightful.
It's been very good. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
To find out more about death doulas and the kind of work that Dina Stander does, go to her website, www.dinastander.com. That's DINASTANDER.
This concludes today's podcast. We're always looking for new ideas, so feel free to reach out to Judy Raper, Associate Dean of Community Engagement at Greenfield Community College at 413-775-1819 if you have an idea you'd love to share. Special thanks to the creators of Backyard Oasis, Denise Schwartz, Chad Fuller, Dennis Lee, and Christine Copeland. Have a great day.